Hello and welcome to our very first call for IRSPT. And it's the 16th of May, 2016, and I'm so very excited to welcome you to this program. It's a very special program to me. It's something that I just love guiding people through, and I love the concept of what it's doing, what learning this information is going to do to you within the context of your practice. And it's something that what I've seen in the previous people that have gone through this program has been nothing short of miracles in some cases. So you now have the opportunity to go through this program with us and to be guided through it. And I'm going to share with you tonight how that's going to work and look for you. And then we're going to open it up to whatever questions you may have at this point so far about the program itself, about the materials that you've gone through. Some of you joined a couple of weeks ago when we first opened it up, and some of you joined today, so you may not have had a chance to really look deep inside the program. So I want to give you an idea of what we've set up for you, how it's going to work, how these calls can flow, and how I'm here for you and ready to support you in your journey to become the best health practitioner that you can be. And I know that we all have this like mission. We're all committed. We don't get into this profession because it's glamorous or because it's prosperous necessarily, at least when we first start. We get in it because we care about people. We get in it because we're committed. We've seen what the world of health is like right now. We've seen what the conventional healthcare is, which I don't even like to call healthcare. I call it disease management. We've seen what that is, and we're committed to changing it. And I'm happy. I know that you and I are sharing that mission. I know it in talking to those of you I've already talked to, and I'm really looking forward to getting to know everybody in this program. So this is the first of three live, very specific, just people in the insulin resistance solution practitioner training. And there's three of these, one per month. This is May. We'll do one in June. We'll do one in July. And then we also have monthly calls once a month, and you actually get 6 months of that where one, we already, for people who joined early, already had their May one. We'll have a June one. We'll have a July one, August, September, like basically through the end of the year. So that doesn't mean it's going to take you that long to actually go through the course. We anticipate most people take between 6 and 12 weeks to go through the course. If you've got a super busy life, then you're going to go through it more slowly. If you've got more time, you're going through it more rapidly. But if you want to take longer, you certainly can. But even after you've gone through all the modules and, you know, starting to implement it, we still want to be there to support you, because as you get clients and you're taking them through, you might find kind of unusual results, right? Because our clients are not textbooks. They haven't read the textbook description of what they're supposed to present like. And we need to be able to move through what's going on for them and understand it. And that's where lots of years of clinical practice helps, and that's where my 25 years in doing this stuff can help you to shortcut the learning and the process of figuring out what's going on for people. So tonight we're going to just kind of share a little bit about what's going on, and then I'm going to open it up for your questions. These are coaching calls. These are calls where you can ask questions if you're confused about some technical content. They're places where you can ask, well, how would I implement that in my practice or with my clients? You can ask questions like, I have this client who's presenting this way. How could I work with them to help them to really balance their blood sugars? And we're all talking about this process, this concept. It's kind of like the elephant in the room. It's not really talked about too much. We talk about people with blood sugar imbalance, and we talk about the people who have diabetes and metabolic syndrome, and in some cases, insulin resistance, when they are clinically diagnosable by medical practitioners. We're talking about catching these people decades before. Also, though, you are going to be working with diabetics. You are going to have diabetics come in and say, hey, I want you to help me diet-wise so I can control this, so I don't have to take so much medication, or I don't want to get on medication, and my doctor wants me to go on it, and I don't really want to. We get a lot of people like that come in to see practitioners like us. And so we say, okay, I can help you. So we can work with this program people who have diabetes, We can work with people with metabolic syndrome. We can work with people who have insulin resistance. And in the program, we differentiate that, especially in that in the intro module and the assessments, like in terms of what's the difference and how do we clinically assess where that person is in the spectrum. But more so than that, we're helping you to help those people that are coming in with chronic issues that nobody's really been able to help them with, because nobody's really looked at the fact that they have subclinical insulin resistance or they have pre-insulin resistance. And that's where you're going to shine, because a lot of the people that couldn't get help before are now going to be able to get help because you're going to identify it. You're going to help them get those blood sugars in balance. You're going to help them to reverse some of the damage that those higher levels of insulin cause, and we're going to help you to avoid them going down the pathway of all the dangers of insulin. As we talked about in the preview webinar that led up to this, there's a lot of things that insulin can create. So rather than go through that again with you and, you know, risk boring those who've heard it before, I'll just recommend that you go into the site and there's a module called Introduction. Some of it's going to be repetitious for you if you came to my pre-webinars, and some of it's going to be new, but either way, it's a review. So it has that information fresh in your mind. This time going through it, you have a transcript and you have some slides. So you actually have all the things you need to highlight and to really make this stuff second nature. People say to me a lot, well, how do you do that? How do you spew all this stuff out of your head? It's repetition, 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 years of practice, right? And you'll get there. I promise you, you will get there if you put the effort in to actually read and watch and apply, okay? We're going to give you the opportunity to do that. And when you listen in to others of your colleagues presenting their cases and my response and my support, that's going to teach you too. So one of the bonuses we included was copies of all of recordings, the MP3 recordings of all of the previous Q&A calls that we've done, where we've taken people step by step through. And those aren't things you're necessarily going to sit at your computer just doing nothing but listening to, because you may not have that amount of time. But what you can do with those is you can download them onto your iPhone or iPad, and you can listen to those when you're exercising, when you're driving in the car, when you're grocery shopping, and just have them playing in your mind. And when things like cases come up, you go, oh, that sounds similar to this person, Sally, I'm working with. This is awesome. And when you play it over and over again, you're going to get it. It's just going to be like second nature for you to really assess this stuff and to help people reverse it. So we're excited to have you here. Congratulations. You're taking a step in what I think is one of the foundational pieces of nutritional endocrinology. Nutritional endocrinology is the study and the application of how can you manipulate hormones by using nutrition and lifestyle and thoughts and all those different aspects that we'll go through in this program. But if you just try to jump in and think, oh, this person has a thyroid problem because they came in to see me and they're on thyroid medication, they have all the symptoms of thyroid, I'm going to go in and naturally manage their thyroid, you know, see what we can do to support them food-wise and herb-wise and supplement-wise. But you don't look to see if they have signs of insulin resistance. You're going to be hitting your head against the wall for that thyroid issue because you're going, well, why isn't this happening? Why aren't they improving? If they have an underlying blood sugar. So this is really basic. I consider the blood sugar balancing and the digestion to be kind of sister programs and sister relationships that are the core, the basic, the base of the pyramid of getting your hormones in balance. So with that said, I'm just going to let you know that you will be getting messages from me. The entire program is open to you, but I'm going to kind of guide you through, okay, this is what to look for in the intro module. This is what to look for in module one. This is what to look for in module two. All of those emails have been completely written and published in our campaigns or in our sequences of emails for you for the intro and the module one. So if you just started today, you're going to get some of the stuff for the intro and the module one, which is assessments. And the part two, some of you got who signed up earlier today probably got an email that said, hey, part two is, it's next to do part two. The emails may come to you in a way that's faster than you want them to come or slower than you want them to come. So if they come faster than you want them to come, then what you do is you go ahead and you just save those emails, create a separate folder, and then you just kind of go through them. Okay, I finished that part. You can read the nuances of it. We do this because what we find is that when people start programs, they get busy and then they forget. They like busy with other stuff and they go, oh, I forgot about that. So we send you emails on a regular basis to check in with you and see how you're doing. Okay, and you'll be getting that, and that's going to be just a really great way for you to keep in touch with it. One of the things I want to say is that there's a spot on your site under support that says ask the doctor questions for calls. No? That's not there? Okay. There's nothing. Okay. So I've just been informed that that's not there. So you'll be getting emails that tell you when those calls are coming. We changed it, I guess, somehow in the middle. You'll get an email. You'll get an email. Usually we do it a week before a call, and then we do it the day before a call, and then we do it the day of a call, like an hour before. So you'll get the reminders, and all you have to do to submit questions is to click the link that says go here to get on the site or get on the call via the web, and then you just type in your question there, and we'll get all those questions answered. It looks like Brooke did that already, which is great. We're looking forward to answering her questions. And so before we like jump in, I want to find out, are there any questions about how, you know, materials are going to be delivered, et cetera. And I'm going to kind of go along with that and say there's a forum for you to be able to submit questions on the site, right? There's a support tab that says submit to, like, if there's technical questions, like you're not able to get to a module you think should be open. All the modules are open right now. But I recommend that instead of jumping in, you know, in different various orders, is that you go through in sequence. Some people say, well, oh, my God, there's all these modules and I don't know where to start. Well, it's customary to start at the beginning and then just flow through it one at a time. We debated whether we would just open the modules like a week apart, but we decided that because so many of you are working at different paces, we wanted to just have you have access to the whole thing right from the start, and you could pace yourself. Some people go through it in 6 weeks. Some people go through it in 12 weeks. Okay? I'm just opening up my site just to make sure I didn't miss anything that I wanted to do, and it looks like it disappeared. So I'm going to go ahead and open it up. Now, I just want you to know that we are in the process of two different things. We're in the process of migrating to a much more powerful server. And right now they're in the middle of moving stuff over. So there might be like an hour or so that if you log in, it's not going to work. So by tomorrow morning, it should hopefully be all working real well. Okay, so if you have problems like that in the next 12 hours, then I just hold off and check it out in the morning. But if you have problems beyond that, absolutely let us know. And we're working on getting anything fixed. So we found that our server was not of a high enough capacity to support everything that we had on it, and we're moving. And then probably within another week or so, we're moving the entire nutritional endocrinology piece, that so including our SPT, will be moved off of the main website server and onto its own. So you have access to, like, it's dedicated, and you won't have a whole lot of interruption at that point. So if there's any questions at all about how the program's going to run, about calls, about access to your materials, and what to expect, then go ahead and raise your hand with a *2 on your telephone keypad. And then I am opening up the pages and make sure that everything that's supposed to be available to you is. This program has, there's no questions? Okay. Great. You did find it. Okay. Okay. All right. So we're going to go to the first module. So you're going to see when you log in, you're going to be, once you get into it, you'll see that always on the right-hand side. You can always get to any module you want to by going to where it says IRSPT, and there's a little green, like a down arrow caret. You know, it's like the top of an arrow. And when you click that, it opens up the list of all the modules that are in there. And this starts with introduction. Once you click that introduction, on the left-hand side, what you're going to see is modules, IRSPT introduction, module index of parts. That used to be open, and somehow that's not open anymore, so we're working on getting our web guide to fix that. But when you click that arrow again, that down arrow, you're going to see all the different parts of a module, and every module has a similar layout. It starts out with a progress checklist, which is a list of all the different activities that you do in that module to really master this, and you can print that out, and you do the checking. There's a list of learning objectives, like what are you expecting to learn and master by the end of this module. There's a pretest, which is like how much do you know about this subject already. So we find that that's just for you. We don't look at it. If you're going to be certified, we don't grade it or anything. We expect people to know very little. Some people know more than others. But it gives you a frame of reference so that you know what areas you really need to focus on. Okay, and then unfortunately, when you click the module piece, you end up with that thing closing. So you have to keep opening it. And then, like I said, we are aware of that, and we have our web guy working on it. Not sure what happened when they upgraded WordPress or something. There's a pretest. Then there's the core content. Your core content has one or more videos, usually one, but sometimes there's two. And that's really about that particular aspect of the program. That's where we present slides and studies and actions that you can take with your clients. And I explain it step by step. Most of those videos are actually, most of those videos are going to be about an hour long. Some of them are slightly shorter. Some of them are slightly longer. Okay, and then after the core content. On that core content page, you're also going to, in some cases, you're going to have handouts and checklists and assessments and a whole bunch of other documents, but you always will have a transcript, and you'll always have slides, and you'll have an MP3 and an MP4 downloadable version. And that's what we're really excited about, because I think that, a lot of programs don't give you that, and I want you to be able to download and listen whether you're attached to the internet or not. Underneath core content, we have advanced topics and references. And that's where there may be topics that are not really part of the core, but it's studies I might have found or lists of books and studies and other things that are related where you can actually learn more. So, for example, on the introduction, there's a really cool article that I have a link to. It's Brain Insulin Resistance Contributes to Cognitive Decline in Alzheimer's, because in the introduction, there's a couple of videos in there, I mention the connection between insulin resistance and Alzheimer's. So I gave you a reference and a link. Following that is what's called next steps, which is, okay, now that you've gone through this, in order for you to really cement this in you, you want to do some actions. You want to actually do something to put it into place. So there's some action steps. On the intro, it's very basic. Take notes as you watch the videos. Make a list for your stuff and the steps involved in supporting clients with insulin resistance. In others, it's much longer because there's more things that we recommend. Oftentimes, what we recommend in next steps is, okay, find a client, a patient, a family member, and actually apply some of the things that we learned in that module. Okay, and then after that, you've got your post-test. So once you've gone through all that, then you test your post-test. Some of you don't. We found that some were not allocated, but you should have that, and we'll have that for every single module. You're going to click there, and there's a service that we use. It's called Exam Professor. And you've got to log in to Exam Professor separately. It's a separate service, but it's the same user ID and password, the same email address and password, unless you've changed it on the site, like later. Like if you've done it before we allocated the exam to you, you're the same. So it might not be the same. And if it's a problem, there's always a way that you can change it, and you can just
You can always email Lynn and she'll get it changed. And then there's also, you can change it with an exam professor. It says forgot your password. And so you click on forgot your password, you put your email address in, you say send, and then it'll send you the ability, I think, to make a new password, and then you can change it. Okay? So I recommend you keep it the same in the both sites. That way you don't have to be thinking a lot. But the tests are to show your mastery. There's probably about 20, 25 questions in each of the tests. And if you want to go for your certification, which is optional, you don't have to, then it's required that you do pass all the tests. Okay, and once you're finished that module, you go to the right-hand side and you say, okay, I'm ready to do assessment, and then you move on. Okay, if ever you have any questions about the content or how it's going and the exam professor, Lynn is always available to answer that. But if it's a technical question like how do you download this or this isn't available, it's best to go to where it says support, and then it has this technical. Where does it say that? Isn't there a technical support one? Under support, it says way at the bottom. Okay, scroll down, and under support, it'll say technical assistance. If you click on technical assistance and you type your question in there, you're going to get faster response than if you email Lynn, because email Lynn is just going to send it off to Stacy, who directly gets the technical stuff. The technical question. So if it's anything at all related to I can't get access to this, or something's happening, or how do I do this, or I forgot my password, what do I do? That's all questions that you can ask Stacy. And so you do that by clicking the technical. But if you have more of a question about content, or how do I use this? Am I allowed to use this particular form or whatever, then Lynn would be a good way to go. And if you are having trouble, you've submitted a technical thing and you're still having trouble, then you can reach out to Lynn. So Lynn is one of our coaches and she's brilliant and you all know her as being brilliant and she answers a lot of our questions. She's a great researcher and she's available, but I just don't want to spend her time tracking down links and trying to do technical stuff, because that's not her area of expertise. She's brilliant as a practitioner, but not necessarily, you know, her area of expertise is not the computer back end. So let's just get that to Stacy via the technical. Okay? So anyway, we're going to open it up for questions. So if you have any questions about anything I just discussed, about the website, about your tests, about anything at all, let us know. And Lynn will answer if you have questions about certification, like if you don't understand something on the certification page, she can answer that. She can help you because, you know, she works a lot with the certification process. And she'll be on our calls, most of our calls, I think, as far as I know, all of them. And she usually mans the chat and she just communicates back and forth. And if there's a question comes up, she has this innate ability to just like find a link to something before I could even type it. So I don't know how she does that, but she has some superpowers when it comes to that, and she'll be able to share some of that stuff. Okay, so what I'm going to do is open it up for any of your questions about the program, about your clients, about how to apply it, if you're already managing to get through some of the modules, about how that applies. So any questions at all, you can submit them. What I'm going to do is go to where Brooke submitted a whole bunch of questions, and I'm going to answer her questions. Okay? So Brooke says, what's the best way to test how foods affect blood sugar? I would assume this should be done by eating the foods alone and then testing, but in a situation where someone is measuring their blood sugar through the day and eating combined meals, is there a way to pinpoint which foods might be raising? This is a great question. So if someone is drinking a green smoothie with greens, chia seeds, avocado, and pear, and their blood sugar's going up, would it be safe to assume that the pear is the culprit? Can we assume that the fats, protein don't raise blood sugar? In general, so this is a good question. We do go through it on, if you go into the assessments module, and then there's a link to the glucose testing page. It's a whole page, and there's some awesome videos on that page. Not only do I show you how to test it, which you may or may not need, but in addition, I have two videos on interpretation
of it and the various ways that you can test. But in general, so say somebody eats a meal, and like Brooke said, they eat a smoothie with greens, chia seeds, avocado, and pear. It would be safe to assume it's the pear. So you'd basically look at it and say, what's the highest glycemic food in this meal? And then what you would do, rather than testing the pear by itself, which is one way to do it, I would recommend you make that same smoothie, but you take out the pear, okay? And then you test that smoothie without the pear. So if the sugar's still going up, but not as much, then you say the pear was contributing it to it, but something else might be. Add greens, chia seeds, and avocado, unlikely that any of those are going to raise somebody's blood sugar. I've been doing this for decades, and I've not really seen people's sugars go up with avocado or chia seeds or greens. Usually the blood sugar goes down. So a lot of folks, if they eat a food that causes their blood sugar to go up, and they go ahead and make like a chia gel, which we give you recipes for, making a chia beverage, then their sugar goes down. I remember somebody saying, yo, I've calculated it. I need a quarter of an avocado if my sugar goes up to this range, or I need a half of an avocado if it goes up a little higher to this range. And what you're going to be coaching your clients to do is just really figure this whole thing out for themselves. And when they create their maps, their postprandial glucose maps, you're going to be able to see very clearly. And we've given you some charts in the done for you section of the assessments module that you can actually use with your clients, and you're welcome to use them and give them links to them and let them use those to track. And we have one that charts as well. So this is a trick. It's, you know, it's not always straightforward. If you just test the pear and the pear shoots their sugar up, obviously it's the pear, but it's that combination as well. Okay. That's a good question. And you said, can we assume that fats and proteins don't raise blood sugar? In general, yes, but you have to always realize that people are unique. And I've had folks who have eaten certain foods that you wouldn't think would raise their blood sugar, but they do. So you just assume that some of that stuff is kind of consistent, and you go for the high glycemic foods first. I believe the glycemic index is actually great guideline, but you can't use it to determine who's going to react what ways to what. So Brooke has another one. I have issues with calm magnesium making me feel extremely weak after taking it, and I'm wondering what the correlation might be. I took it a few years ago after 3 days of eating a small quantity amount nightly. I ended up extremely confused, weak, and bloated with a high sex drive for a day or two. I recently tried to add it back in, and an hour after one serving, I felt as if my blood pressure dropped. My feet were tingling. My heartbeat slowed and became pretty weak. My breathing was shallow, and I got pretty panicky. I've had this happen a few other times when taking any of the following. Ibuprofen, hydrocodone, progesterone. I'm curious if these are clues that I should be paying attention to and what my body might be trying to tell me, especially since now I'm learning that magnesium plays a role in blood sugar. Wow. There could be excipients. There could be additives. There could be any number of things that would cause you to react that way. And it's really hard to tell because I've never heard of anybody reacting that way to magnesium. I've heard them get diarrhea, get a little bit of, you know, kind of queasy feeling and feel like they're getting diarrhea or loose stools. But what's the connection between the way you feel after ibuprofen, hydrocodone, even progesterone, might be the formulation, and something in the processing, might be something, the way it's affecting your liver. That could be a thing. So the liver might be an issue. But these are very different things, right? Magnesium citrate, ibuprofen, hydrocodone, and progesterone. Very different. Like two drugs, a hormone that's naturally produced in the body. And I would ask, is it natural, bioidentical progesterone, or is it a progestin, which is a synthetic form of it? So off the top of my head, I can't think of any reasons exactly why, but I would say try a different form of magnesium and see if the same thing happens, so you can differentiate between, is it magnesium per se, or is it the form, the citrate form, or something particularly in the calm. I would look at Maybe magnesium glycinate, that's a good one. There's magnesium taurate, and I would play with a couple of the different kinds of magnesiums. I would see if it's dose dependent, like is it when you have 400 milligrams versus 200 milligrams? So whenever we're trying to understand what's happening with one of our clients, there's a lot of little experimentation that you need to do, and that's part of the therapeutic process, the assessment process that you need to run through. So you need to say, okay, so it happened with this magnesium. Is it going to happen with all types of magnesium? So you have a test that way. Is it going to happen with a lower dose of magnesium? Is there something specific? Is it something that you're having with the magnesium? I'm assuming not, because you don't say that. You said 3 days of taking a small amount nightly. So, you know, it seems to me like the thing I would look at is getting a different form of magnesium and seeing that help, how that helps. In the first module, Brooke, again, you talk about how our cells being insulin resistant, and when this happens, the sugar gets into the fat cells instead. What is the name of the cells that sugar should be going into? Are these cells the only ones that can send a signal to our brain that we are full? Okay, so the fat cells generally are the ones that are going to send the signal to your brain that you're full, unless you're leptin resistant, because the fat cells will produce leptin. And generally after a meal and they're nice and chock full, they send the leptin signal. But what happens over time when people develop insulin resistance, they also develop leptin resistance. So the cells that they should be going into would be your muscle cells, your liver cells, all of your different organ cells, like your metabolically active cells, your brain cells. Right? But when those cells become resistant and the sugar builds up, it naturally flows into the fat cells, which don't become resistant. They're there for storing that extra piece. Okay. Brooke said, I don't think I thought that last question through far enough. I think the cells that become insulin resistant are called our blood cells, right? Actually, no. Okay, it's really your cells, like I said before. So it's your muscle cells, your liver cells, your kidney cells, your brain cells, all the metabolically active tissues in the body that need energy, right? All those organs and glands need energy in order to function, right? So when, like I say to people, when you're low in energy and when the glucose isn't getting into the cells, it's not just that the person feels fatigued. It's that all the cells are low energy. So the gut cells, the gut lining, you know, those cells don't get enough energy. They're not going to be as contractile, and the person may have sluggish digestion, right? If the liver cells are sluggish, there's an issue with storing glycogen, but also with the liver's metabolic functions like detox and producing bile and all that. Okay, let me refresh and see if any of you else have done that, and then I'll look at the chat. Okay, so yeah, there are a few more. Okay. Jill Hartman says, I'm a little confused with the Before Be Gone program. Printed the whole thing. Do we do this before getting into the IR program, or we do the modules together? Great question, Jill. You do them together, and on each of the pages in the insulin resistance program, we give you a link to the corresponding program in the Before Be Gone. So I would recommend that you go through, you can do it in either order. You can go through the, I would rather go through the insulin resistance piece of it. You understand it from a perspective of why we're doing these different things and why your client would be doing it. Then you can see what we're actually doing and taking people through. So that's the way I would do it. So somebody doesn't have a name. Mary says, which module, if any, will explain how to read labs and decipher the abbreviations? That's a good question. We teach you how to read the specific labs that are related to insulin resistance. So hemoglobin A1C, the fasting insulin, fasting glucose. But as far as reading the entire lab, that's a separate course, and that's a module, a very long, like 20-hour module, that we teach as part of our nutritional endocrinology training program. But as far as these labs, we have a chart in there, and we teach you exactly in the assessments module. You'll learn about how to do it for the insulin-related ones and the sugar-related ones.
Agnes says, I noticed you have two different lab resources, one for license, the other for non-license. Can you clarify who falls under each group in the context of this course? Yeah, absolutely. So certain labs will allow only licensed healthcare practitioners, primary healthcare practitioners, like an ND, an MD, a DC, to order them. Some states, acupuncturists are allowed to order tests. Some states, they're not. So it depends on what your scope of practice. If you are a health coach, a nutritionist, some states allow for nutritionists to order tests. Some labs allow for nutritionists to order tests, some not. So it just depends on what your licensure is. But in general, if you're a health coach, if you're an IIN, you know, integrative health coach like that, or you've got a license in, I don't know, psychotherapy, you might be able to. I'm not sure what psychotherapist license are. So it's a medical lab. So what you would do if you weren't sure if your lab was, if your licensure was covered, is you could reach out to each of the labs and say, hey, I'm a this kind of practitioner, and can I set up an account? In our nutritional endocrinology program, which is our, you know, 2-year certification that includes this insulin resistance training, we've set up a relationship with all the labs, not all of them, but a bunch of them, where our practitioners can order the labs, if they're not licensed primarily in their state, to under our license, under my license. So, but they, you have to be in that program in order to be able to do it, because I have to make sure that you have all the training you need, because they don't restrict like certain labs and not others. So I have to make sure that you've gotten the training that you need, which we give in the NEPT program. Good question, Agnes. Okay, so Jill says, I get energy drop episodes. I can feel my legs and arms go weak and a bit confused. One doctor thought it was reactive hypoglycemia, but when I took my blood count, it was about 90 or so. Another doctor thought it was my blood pressure dropping and saw it was a bit in the office, and saw it a bit in the office when I stood. I noticed it happened a few times after drinking celery juice, once with popcorn, and all other times could not put my finger on it. I'm down almost the whole day. Wow. Can I be reacting to food sensitivities, or are foods actually causing something in the body to drop the blood pressure? Have had this about 10 years. No one's putting a finger on it. So one of the things I would recommend, it could be what's called orthostatic hypotension, that you're, when you stand up, your blood pressure drops suddenly. That could be related to adrenal fatigue. So that's one possibility. And if you have had it for a long time and nobody's put their finger on it, and that indeed happens, then adrenal fatigue is the way to go. So if this is happening with one of your patients or clients, I'd recommend that you take the blood pressure. First, you take the blood pressure sitting, the normal way that we take the blood pressure. You take it sitting. Then you have them lie down on their back, rest there for a few minutes, and take their blood pressure after they've been lying down. It should be lower. Then what you do is you inflate the blood pressure cuff, and you have them stand up, and you take it immediately upon standing, as soon as they're up, and you see if it's gone down. It typically should go up. So from lying down to standing should go up by 10 points or more. If it goes down, that's a suggestion of what's called orthostatic hypotension. And what does that mean? It's postural low blood pressure. So the blood pressure goes down. And so you want to be comparing it to lying down and standing up, because you could take your blood pressure lying down and it could look normal. If you don't compare it to standing up, then you're not really getting an accurate measurement. So that's one thing. Interesting that a few times it happened after drinking celery juice. So sometimes it could be that your blood sugar shot up and it went down, and you might not have taken it at the right time to see it go down too far. It could be going down. So I would start doing the process that we've taught and track and map the blood sugar so that you can see exactly what it is, and use the chart that I've given you where it has other symptoms. Track all your food, track all your blood pressures and blood sugars, and then track all those other parameters of health and really lay it out. And you don't have to do this forever, but do it for a good solid week if this thing tends to happen. Now, can you be reacting to foods you're sensitive? Yes, absolutely. So that's why the only real way to know is to track every meal, all your exercise activity, and then your pre-meal blood sugar, and then what's called the postprandial, which would be after meal, but at all the different points that we recommended. And then you'll have some really good information. This is great, Jill, because it gets you to be able to evaluate yourself and be able to learn a process for evaluating your patients or clients. Okay, so that's all I see there. I'm going to look at the chat. I guess you're in on the chat. Oh, I see it, but I'm not actually in there. That's good. Are these your answers? Have you tried magnesium oil, Brooke? That's okay. Yeah, so that's a great, if you can't tolerate an oral magnesium oil is great, where you can put it on topically, or you can take magnesium baths. And I've had people who have had lots of muscle tension and lots of symptoms that could suggest magnesium deficiency and taken magnesium and just not getting anywhere, and then started taking magnesium baths, and that skin absorption worked really well. Okay, let me see. And Brooke, if you can't stay for the whole conversation, all you need to do is go ahead and change the listen in. So note where you left off, and then you can just listen from where you left off. And we have Jeanette in the San Francisco area, and Terry in Phoenix. Welcome, guys. And Shelley from California, and Laura from Oklahoma. We have people from all over the country. And we have a few other people that didn't say where they're from. We have Laura said where she's from. Let's see, Brooke. Shelley, there was one of the, Dika King, hi. And perfect. Brooke says the recorded calls have been so helpful. I'm glad. And yeah, just go back and at your leisure, you listen to a lot of the recorded calls. It may be that you listen to them too soon in the process. You're going to go, huh, I didn't learn that yet, right? So if it's true, just know that it goes into your subconscious. And the next time you hear it after you've learned that lesson, it's going to make a whole lot more sense. Okay. And take notes on them. If certain things pop out that seem really clinically relevant, take notes. Take good notes. Oh, cool. Lynn found an article for Brooke on when magnesium makes me feel worse. I told you she's brilliant at finding links. So I haven't read that article. I'll read it later, and we'll see if there's anything in there that says anything other than what I said already. Okay. I think that's it. So let me go. Oh, Houston. Great. I'm not in Texas right now. I live in Texas, so I live in Austin. So we're in Florida right now. Mary says Activation Products has a topical magnesium spray called Ease. Is that new? That my clients have awesome results. I know Activation Products has a really very high quality magnesium oil. It's probably the best on the market. I compared it both ways. That was the product that the first time I ever had magnesium oil, I was thinking it was snake oil. I was at a festival. It was a raw foods festival, and I went past the table and goes, oh, have you tried magnesium oil? And I just like, magnesium oil? What the heck does that mean? Well, it's not really oil, so that's the thing. It's called magnesium oil, but it's really just topical magnesium. And he said, yeah, it's really good for pain, and do you have any spots on your body? And as a matter of fact, I said, yeah, I just had this big bursitis on my elbow, didn't know where it came from, but assumed it was when I was on an airplane, and the flight attendant came down the aisle and bumped my elbow with the cart, and nothing happened for like a day really, and then it started swelling up huge, and then it had come down, but it was still hurting like 2 months later. And I was like, wow, this thing isn't getting much better. So they said, okay, let's put this magnesium oil. So I put the stuff on, and they said, come back tomorrow, we'll see how it is. And by the next day, the pain was gone, and I was like, okay, I'm buying a bottle. You know, I don't care if it's snake oil. It worked for me. It's going to work for my clients. But then I started using a different brand, which was much cheaper, and it didn't have as profound an effect. So I like the Activation Products, but I've never seen their Ease Magnesium, and I'm not sure what that is. And Michelle, you live in Tampa. You're just a little bit away. You're like 20 miles away. We'll be going up to Tampa at some point to visit Whole Foods and stock up on food. But we just got here to St. Pete about, what, last night, really late, like 2 in the morning. So it's been a long journey. We drove here and all. So I love this area, though. I love getting up in the morning and having a beach to run on. You guys are so lucky. It's too hot for Lynn, but it's perfect for me.
I'm from Austin, so. All right. So let's go see. I don't see any more on the chat. I'm going to go back to the Q&A, and then I'm going to go back to see if anybody has their hands open. So raise your hand, star 2, and I'll open up your line. Okay, so let's refresh the Q&A, and we have one from Laura. Oh, great. Laura, this is a great question. When we complete this training, if we choose to continue to NEPT, the Nutritional Endocrinology Practitioner course, would we need to retake or repay for this portion? Absolutely not. You'll get 100% credit for whatever you did and all the tests you did, so it's just 100% credited. And we're not going to make you pay again. Super. And let's see, I have a question. I have two of them from Crystal in California, and I don't know what E and K written in Massachusetts, so I'll go with Crystal. Oh, is that Eric? Okay, I saw Eric on the other place. Okay, Crystal, hello. Why don't you speak, and let's see if we can hear you okay.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, hi, Crystal.
Okay, hello. So I have a patient that we did labs on last week. And I just wanted to run those by you. So her fasting glucose was 83.
Okay.
Her A1C was 5.7. But her insulin was only 1.8. And her main complaint has been like severe abdominal distension and bloating, but like she doesn't notice any difference with the types of food she's eating or carbs. It's just very constant. It's very taut and tight. And it's like all the way up to her diaphragm, but CT and MRI have been negative except for a little bit of fatty deposits on the liver.
Okay, and how old is she?
She is like 52.
Mm-hmm. Does she have any family history of diabetes or insulin resistance?
Not that I know of. We're going to be getting together again in a couple more weeks when the rest of the lab tests come in. So that's about the information I have at this point.
Okay, so my suspicion is that, so she was a hemoglobin A1C of 5.7. Is she an athlete, first of all? Because sometimes they're an athlete.
So she does. She's like a lifestyle and wellness coach. So I think she's, you know, very active, works out a lot, you know, does a lot of speaking engagements, does a lot of training. So I think she's very active.
Okay, so that's one thing. And she's normal weight or is she overweight?
She's not really overweight. She just has that severe bloating.
Okay. So bloat. Okay. So when I look at a hemoglobin A1C of 5.7, that's somewhere in the like 117 to 119 range for average blood glucose, mm-hmm. which doesn't gel with an 83 and doesn't really gel with a 1.8. So the best thing that you can do for this person is to have her track some of her meals and see what her postprandials are in glucose. Because
okay.
it could either be that she's very athletic and that raises the hemoglobin A1C because the blood cell turnover is common. It's been reported. But it also could be that she has these spikes. The spikes, of course, can be caused by high glycemic foods, the starches and the sugars or even fruit sometimes. But it can also be caused by stress responses and over-exercising. So sometimes people over-exercise, you know, people who are just out there 2-3 hours a day, and maybe their adrenals are starting to burn out, but they're still over-exercising, that can cause spikes in the blood sugar. So I would highly recommend if you can get her to get a glucose meter, at least do it for like 3 to 5 days. If she's a fitness type, she's probably going to be fine with it. You say, look, we're just trying to figure this out. Let's just track it and let's just see. Okay, and then the same thing with the bloating. A lot of times, here's what people do. They say, well, I don't notice any difference with specific foods, but they've never actually written down things so that they could see it over the course of 3 to 5 days or 3 to 5 weeks or, you know, a week or two, not 3 to 5 weeks necessarily, and actually play detective. And they don't necessarily know how to do that, but you can. So a lot of times, too, I don't really notice a difference, but when I look at their layouts, it's like, oh, it's really consistent with certain sets of types of things, like it may be a combination of particular food and a particular exercise. There's so many things that can be causing it. Now, it could be that the bloating has nothing to do with her blood sugar. It could have something to do with a problem with SIBO, with probiotics, You have to ask a lot of questions about whether she's been on antibiotics and how long she might have been on them, and did she replenish her gut flora after that. It could be eating too fast. And I know that sounds like, oh, people are looking for these magical, you know, sexy solutions. But a lot of times people are eating on the run. They're very busy and they're eating like that. And the bloating happens and it throws off their gut flora. So there's a number of things. And if you get her to track, even if it's just for 5 days, you might be able to like, look, this is an exercise person. She's really into fitness. Track it. You know, and then you might be able to figure it out. And you can always, you know, upload her tracking things, have her scan it and get it to you, and you can always upload it to us and we can do it on a call. Okay? Oops, did you disappear? Oops, she went away. Oh, Crystal. Oh, wait, somebody, did you shut her line? Wow, your line got shut. I'm so sorry. I was trying to wait for you to answer, and it looks like your line got shut. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah, I think it cut off somehow and had to restart.
Oh, you really came back in. Yeah, that might be.
I heard most of it. So why should be getting more information. Her adrenal test and her stool test should be back in a week or two. So
very good. Yeah,
have some more information there.
Right, and make sure you do a really thorough history. The thorough history sometimes uncovers like 90% of what's going on, so really ask a lot of those questions. And then come to any of the calls and ask, you know, give me the extra information and get her to track, upload the chart, and happy to help you through this one.
Okay, thank you. And do you see that often then, like their insulin will be that low, they're just starting to burn out?
Well, the only way you'll know if it's burnout, 1.8 isn't bad. Fasting insulin of 1.8 is actually not bad. Around 2 is really ideal. So it could be that she's burning out. The only way you're going to know is to do a postprandial. So I would start with the postprandial glucoses, right? So charting it out and before and after and see what that's at. And then now this might be a person that has a lot of situation going on, right? It could be somebody who has that autoimmune. And we talk about that a little bit more in the assessments piece. And it could be somebody like that. She's 52, so and she's not diabetic. She hasn't been diabetic. She doesn't have a high fasting. So it's really unlikely that it's just the pancreatic burnout like you'd get in a type 2 diabetic where all of a sudden the fasting insulin's drop. But it could be a lot of situation since, you know, it's possible that it's just the autoimmune diabetes. So I would say just do her glucose mappings. Because checking postprandial insulin is not that easy to do. There is a test through ZRT Labs that I ordered for myself to try, and I just haven't done it yet, but it's basically you do a prick, you get the blood for the insulin, and then you send it into them to analyze.
Oh,
and that might
okay.
be something to do. And that way you can have her just do, you can get two of them. I ordered two of them for myself, one to do a fasting, and then to go ahead and eat, and then do 45-minute go ahead and test it again and see if it goes up. Because it should go up after eating. Have her eat the highest carbohydrate meal she normally would eat. You don't want them to have to, you know, go into like a shock if they eat sugar and they're not used to eating sugar, right? I mean, I'm not going to do that. But I'd eat my highest carbohydrate meal, which might be blueberries, right? Okay, I'm going to eat blueberries and I'm going to see what my sugar goes up to. And that'll give you a clue. If it's a insulin resistance that's going south, then you wouldn't see as good a uptake. Like I had someone, she's 86 years old, so granted that's a difference between a 52-year-old, but she basically did her postprandial insulin and it didn't go up at all. Like went up like 0.1, so she went from 1.7 to 1.8. That to me says that she's been this way for a long time and she's starting to fail. Her pancreas is starting to fail. So the thing I did with her was to run the antibodies to see if it was failing because of the antibodies that had been undetected up all through these years, or was it because like it's a long time and she had been type 2 for a while or whatever. And it turned out that there were no antibodies. So I just assumed it was that the pancreas was wearing out. So we look at what herbs, what kind of things will help stimulate insulin. Whereas if you have somebody who's a hyperinsulinemic person, you want to avoid those foods that stimulate insulin.
Okay.
Make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay, we have
Reardon in Lowell. Is that Eric?
Hello. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine, Eric.
Thank you. My question is about the course overall. I'm wondering, is it geared toward practitioners just starting out, or do you feel that people that have been in practice for a little while have had some functional medicine training are going to benefit a lot from
it? I think everybody's going to benefit a lot from it because the approach I take is very different. So some of the studies I present are more advanced kind of studies. And I think that the approach of doing the postprandials and the mappings and the testings and all, I think it definitely, we've had MDs that have been in practice for 20, 30 years benefit from taking the course.
Okay.
What kind of practitioner are you?
I'm a sort of CNC, and I've had functional medicine training with Dr. Kalish.
Okay. Yeah, he approaches a lot of really great stuff with the adrenals, but he doesn't really go into the blood sugar as much.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
He does.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm just wondering how basic level or how advanced it is.
It's pretty advanced. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we address it, you know, I try to explain it in a really easy to understand way, but we definitely get into advanced stuff.
And do you feel that, I mean, I've heard you talk a lot about mapping out the glucose and all that. Do you feel that people are willing to do that? I mean, clients are consistently willing to do that?
Consistently. They feel a little, like, intimidated at first. And I would say when I take people through a blood sugar balancing program, if we have, like, 150 people doing it, I would say 90% of them test their glucose.
Okay.
And they get super excited about it because nobody's ever given them a tool to actually see how the food is working in their body. Yeah, you talk to them in a way that you just explain to them, and at first they may be reticent to do it, but I usually will show them. I'll look at them and do it on me. You can see me do it, and I snap it, and I explain to them the value of it, and that it's really the only way to detect subclinical insulin resistance, and the results are phenomenal.
Yeah. That's good. I'm looking forward to it. It is. I haven't done a lot in this area, but I'm just curious about how advanced or basic it is. But thank you. Appreciate
it. Yeah, you're so welcome. Nobody's ever accused me of being too basic. And that's why I said some people will go through it in 4 to 6 weeks, and some people might take 4 months, because depending on where they're starting from.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, so that was that. And who else? Any other questions? Any other comments? Anything else on the chat that I need to address? Yeah, so one of the things, like Eric was asking about, are people really willing to do this? And they're scared. But, you know, a lot of people will just tend to go right to the pad of the finger, and we find that that will get sore. When you do it on the side, that way the pad of the finger is used for everything. So if they're picking things up, they're holding forks, they're, you know, doing anything with their fingers, they're going to get sore. But if you do it on the side of the finger, it tends to work a little bit better. And then you basically teach them how to, you know, massage it afterwards and switch fingers. Now, personally, I get lazy and I just use the one finger over and over and over again. It's kind of silly, but I've been doing it for so long, it doesn't matter to me. But I feel like if you just have them switch around, so you do the right side of the finger, the left side of the finger, a couple of different spots on each, and you just switch it around from finger to finger, that helps them so that they don't get any one finger feeling really sore. Some people say that within the first few days, they'll feel sore, but it's so worth it because they're so excited about seeing this information. And what's really exciting is when they get this information and then they shift their food around. Even the folks that say they're eating really healthily, and they are pretty much, but they're eating, for me, it was pineapple was shooting up my sugar, mango was shooting up my sugar. I was eating really healthily, but because I didn't have all of the five lifestyle areas in balance, my sleep was off, and I had the genetic tendencies, which we're not always going to know about people, right? Not everybody's going out and running a SNP test to figure out their genetic tendencies. But for me, it was that combination of having family history of it, having a lot of the SNPs, the
polymorphisms that predispose to diabetes, plus being like pushing myself really hard and not having the sleep in place, that made a difference. So once I got to the point of really being able to shift that, I was able to get things under control. And I will tell you, since I started doing this, my energy's better, my body fat composition, my distribution. And when I find that when I am go back into the bad sleep habits, like say I'm doing a big project and I'm not sleeping as well, I find that I have much more appetite and much more prone to putting on weight. And so it's really when you can teach people in all the areas, the timing, the stress, the sleep, the fitness, the right fitness for them, because there are people who are over-exercising. They don't want to hear it, that they need to cut down for a while, but they sometimes do. Sometimes people are doing like an hour and a half of aerobics a day. When you can shift them down to a half hour, 45 minutes of aerobics, and doing the burst training, you can see a significant change in what they're doing. So these are really great questions. Yeah, and they can do it in other spots. I haven't done it very much. They give you a little adapter in the kits so that you can do it on the arm. You know, you can do it there. You can do it on the feet, but it's, you know, it doesn't, what's that? You might get different results than you're doing on the hand, but if they're consistently doing it on their feet, then it's comparative. So you're looking for, a lot of it's looking for patterns. A lot of it's looking for patterns. But I tend to like best using the fingers and using the side of the fingers. I'll use the pads sometimes, but if you consistently use the pads, they may complain. But most people don't. Most people will say, oh, it's sore, but they love it. I have people who didn't want to do it at first, and they're just like continuing to do it month after month to just keep everything in check. So it's really empowering, very empowering. Okay. So question on the Q&A, we're going to go back there. And then if you have a question, again, raise your hand, star two. Okay, let me refresh it. Okay, so Agnes, any recommendations when healthy foods like kale, nuts, flax seeds, or chia seeds cause sensitivities or intolerance? If you've got somebody who has a lot of foods that are causing sensitivity, as in, you know, not necessarily blood sugar imbalance, but they get headaches, itchiness, hives, joint pain, a brain fog, any of those things, then you really have to look at their gut. So you really have to look at healing their leaky gut, because that's usually the cause when the healthy foods. Now, there can be like an oxalate sensitivity, but oxalate sensitivity is usually related to leaky gut. They may have a genetic tendency to be sensitive to oxalates, which would be, you know, decent amounts in kale, but very much so in spinach. If they are fine with spinach but not kale, then it's unlikely to be an oxalate sensitivity. Okay? So if they got that, you've got to really look at what's going on with their gut. Nuts, you know, people will say, oh, yeah, I have a sensitivity to nuts. Well, a lot of the nuts are in different families. So when we look at food families, usually people are not going to be allergic to, sensitive to foods in a particular, well, allergic to foods in a particular family is more likely than crossing lots of families. So nuts, actually, you can't just categorize them as one family. But if nuts are causing problems, what's the common denominator between the nuts is high fat. That might be indicating that they have some liver gallbladder stagnation. So those are things to look at as well. Right. So all of these things, except for the kale that you mentioned in this, are higher fat foods. So you've got the nuts, the flax seeds, and the chia seeds. So you want to really be able to differentiate between that. It's a little beyond the scope of this course, but I'm happy to address it. You know, you really want to do the tracking that we're doing. Will help you to determine the foods that they're sensitive to. And I would also go back and really look realistically at their gut function. Okay, so let's see if anybody else has a hand up. Star two. Great. All right, anything else in the chat? Okay. Patients love to see evidence of all the changes. This is Laura. And hard work they're doing, the test will be a powerful tool. Totally, Laura. And that's why they're so excited. Because usually it's like, oh, you have to wait 3 months before you run a lab test again. And this is like, they see changes. And when you get to the point where we teach about doing the metabolic reset and you get them to do all this testing, you put them through the metabolic reset, and they see like,
oh gosh, I used to not be able to eat blueberries because it raised my blood sugar and now it's fine. Or they've really seen the changes. It is phenomenal. You're totally right, Laura. And Brooke, if they have an oxalate sensitivity, would the green juices be okay? Not necessarily. It depends on what green juices. So like arugula is really low oxalate. Romaine lettuce is low oxalate. Kale is moderate oxalate. So it's really a matter of seeing which ones work. So if they truly have an oxalate sensitivity, you've got to avoid some of the green juices. Absolutely. Okay, celery's fine, but. You know, spinach wouldn't be good, and kale might be good in moderation, small amounts. Arugula is totally fine, very low oxalate. Chia seeds are high oxalate as well. So all of those foods, not all of those foods she listed, but it could be an oxalate sensitivity with the foods that were listed in that last list, because chia seeds certainly have a fair amount of oxalates as well. Okay, that's good questions. I'll look one more time at the QA. I'll look one more time at the live call. So here's your last chance for questions. And then we'll let you go. All right. Last chance. Okay, so thank you guys for being here. These calls, as we get further in, you'll be having a lot more questions. So I encourage you, our next call is in 2 weeks. It's on a Thursday. It's in the afternoon at, like, I think, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock. I don't remember the exact time, but you'll get notice of it. It's also on the calendar. So if you click on the schedule page, you should see the calendar of calls. And, you can come to that call. If you have questions and you can't make it to the call, feel free to click on the link to come and type it in or to put it on the Ask the Doctor Questions page. So, really, thank you. I'm so excited to have you all here because this stuff changes people's lives. This stuff changes not only your patients' and clients' lives, but it changes the lives of the folks that are doing it. You as practitioners, we have people who are just feeling so empowered and so confident, and they're going out in their community and talking to people about this, and people get excited to hear this. They get excited, especially if they've been dealing with some chronic health challenges that nobody's really looked at this. They've looked at adrenals. They may have looked at their thyroid. They may have looked at other things, but nobody's really addressed this because they have a subclinical insulin resistance, and nobody tests for subclinical or pre-insulin resistance. And that's where you're going to come in handy and really help people. We've seen dramatic changes. We've seen people who have healed their Hashimoto's in 4 or 5 months. We've seen people who have gotten rid of joint pains relatively quickly, who have normalized their blood pressures, and just feel a lot better. I remember one person came to me who started my program, and she was local in my town, and I do this monthly meetup group. And she came to the meetup group right before the program started. A month later, she came back in, and I like took one look at her, and I practically fell on the floor. I said, what did you do? She had this hourglass figure, and she says, I'm doing your program. That's what I did. And she had lost like 9 inches, and she'd lost like 30 pounds, and she looked phenomenal. So it can happen quickly. Not all people are going to be those instant overnight success cases, but a lot of them are. So, yeah, they get the INE. Yeah, so the next call isn't. Okay, great. So Lynn is telling me that the next call is our open office hours that you get. It's usually on the first Thursday of the month. This time it's June 2nd, and it's 2 p.m. Central, which is about noon Pacific, and 3 on the Eastern. And for those of you in Mountain, I'm not going to begin to try to understand it in the summer because some of you are on Pacific and some of you are on Mountain. So you guys have to know which time zone you're really on in the summer because of the daylight savings. And I think Arizona doesn't do it and some other places don't do it. So you're on your own to figure that on out. But Eastern, it's 3, Central, it's 2, and Pacific, it's noon. So. Well, it's 1 o'clock official Mountain, but some people who are in Mountain don't change it. So they're on Pacific. So, and so it's 1 o'clock Mountain if you're on official Mountain. But if you're in Arizona, I think it's noon because you're on Pacific in the summer. So,
Thank you so much for being here. I'm going to open up your lines so you can all say goodbye to each other. And I appreciate you being here. Come to the calls live because I love getting to know you. And as you ask questions about particular clients, we can follow their progress through. We can continue to ask it. And it's fun for the other folks listening to you as you your clients progress through. If you don't have a client at this point or you're not willing to do it with your clients yet, pick a family member. You know, find a family member that you think could benefit and is open and do it. And for sure do the stuff on yourself. For sure do start doing the blood sugar testing and mapping for yourself so that you're much more equipped to tell them. So good night, everybody. Bye. See you in 2 weeks.